Good evening. Thank you very much all for coming and for caring enough about Syria to make the effort to come. We both appreciate that very, very much. And what we're going to do, I mean, although this is billed as a launch of my second edition, what we're going to do is kind of weave the book slightly into the story of Syria's cultural heritage. And I'm going to start by talking about Damascus and the south, and then Zahid will take over and talk about Aleppo, where he has his own house, and the north. So the idea is to give you an overall picture of Syria, bang up to date as it is now. And the book itself aims to weave the story of the history, the culture, the philosophy, the literature, the art, the architecture. All that is woven into the book in a way, you know, I've tried to make it a timeless book, therefore. But this evening, we'd like to very much focus on the cultural heritage. And as I say, we are aiming to be bang up to date with the latest situation. So you'll see on the slide, this is the house, my house, obviously, as it is now. I mean, I say that, in fact, it's looking slightly tired at the moment, but it's essentially there and intact, at least. So I'm going to take you now on a sort of tour around Syria generally. And just to give you an overview, the this shows all that coloured area, that sort of yellowy-orange area, shows where the areas of conflict and displacement are. And 97% of Syria's archaeological sites, cultural heritage, is in those areas. So you can see immediately that pretty much everything is therefore threatened. And when you look at how that works, you've got the those huge areas with that band running down the Euphrates Valley towards Deir ez-Zor over the Iraqi border. And then you've got these two little pockets in the middle there, in the white area, and the northern one sticking out from the box is Raqqa, the ISIS headquarters. And the other little yellow area below that box is Palmyra. So you can see how close those two are. And all that white area is essentially white because it's desert and unpopulated. So nobody's fighting there because there's nobody there. So it's easy to see, therefore, that since the population is concentrated into all those areas, this explains why over half the population of Syria is currently displaced, either internally or as refugees outside the country. And this now, this is a map of Damascus itself, which is actually in the book, and shows the walled old city. I'm sure plenty of you have been there and know exactly how it is, with the walled, the Roman walls are still intact for 6 kilometres circumference, with all the 8 Roman gates still intact except one. And my house is shown on the map just here at the bottom, and the street called Strait is that main street running east-west through the city. And what's happened now in the old city is that a lot of displaced people, because at the moment it's perceived as very safe in the old city, have come in to as refugees into this area. So it's now very, very crowded indeed, and most homes are housing many, many families, to the extent that, you know, it's quite normal to just rent one room. You know, that's you know, you've lost your house, and you can, if you're lucky, rent one room with your cooking facilities in that room. And I've visited several friends, you know, who are in that position in December. So this is the main facade of the Umayyad Mosque, which is the spiritual centre of Damascus. It is on, it's been a holy site, you know, for millennia. It was an Aramaic temple, and then a Roman temple to Jupiter. Then it became the Christian Cathedral of John the Baptist, and then with the Muslim conquest, it became the Umayyad Mosque. And it's the magnificent building, which really is still the spiritual heart. And these mosaics are a sort of vision of paradise, if you like, fantasized buildings with trees, gardens, rivers. And the nature of the damage that happens in the old city is purely random rebel mortars, basically. They're just fired completely randomly from rebellious suburbs, and this one happened to land right slap bang on the main facade of the Umayyad Mosque. And let's see the damage a bit more close up. That has actually now been repaired. That happened about a year ago, and it has now been repaired. And they've done a reasonable job, actually. I mean, I did see it in December. Now, this is to give you an idea of what's happening in the suburbs in Damascus, because the centre, as I say, in the old walled city, is totally safe, and well, apart from these random mortars which land. But the suburbs is a completely different story. If they are perceived as rebellious suburbs, then they get completely air bombardment. And this is the suburb of Midan, which has been quite a lot of destruction there, and many, many other suburbs, especially to the east and the south, and some in the north, have also suffered really, really colossal damage. Now, this is moving south to Dera, which is where the revolution began, as I'm sure you know. And this is the Omari Mosque, which is one of the earliest mosques in the whole country. And it had just been restored, typical. And then it was badly damaged. And this is actually looting that's gone on inside, because, as I'm sure Zahid will also talk about, it's actually looting and theft are almost more of a threat to cultural heritage than fighting per se. Now, Palmyra, as I mentioned at the beginning, is very, very threatened. It's a huge site, 19 square kilometres in the middle of the desert, so it's completely unprotected, unfenced. It's on a caravan city on the trade routes. And the regime has been in control of it from the start, and placed itself up in that the fort you can just about see at the top there, and has dug a road right the way across the site and made earth banks up to protect the tanks. There's multiple rocket launchers in Diocletian's camp. It's sort of quite a lot of damage because it's a structural and a strategic point with the high fort there. And the Temple of Bel within Palmyra is one of the most important religious buildings of its period in the whole of Syria. And Palmyra is the showcase site for Syria. And some of the columns have been destroyed in some shelling. Kraktish value. Again, because of its strategic location there, guarding the Homs Gap, it's been shelled by the regime because it became a rebel stronghold for its strategic value. 12th century Hospitallers, Knights Hospitallers site. Very, very impregnable. It never actually fell. It was never actually taken by any invading army in all years. And the shelling caused a lot of internal damage. That beautiful Gothic loggia that I'm sure those of you who've been there will remember has suffered a lot of extreme damage there. But, again, they are actually starting to mend it. There is work going on, and I'm sure it will eventually start to take shape again. Now, this is an example for the Christian sites. This monastery, the Cherubim Monastery, is right up 1,900 metres. And as you can see from the stonework, it's on. It's a Roman temple. You can see the Roman stonework, the Roman pillars there. It's all been recycled. But because of its strategic location to control the smuggling routes in and out of Lebanon, because it sits directly above Saint Neya, it's been taken by the regime and turned into a kind of barracks. And Bosra, again, right down in the south, has been in regime hands all through the revolution until last week. Last week, suddenly, 10,000 soldiers from many groups, including Jabhat al-Nusra, stormed it and have taken Bosra, claimed to have taken Bosra. They displaced the regime from this the Roman amphitheatre here, which is obviously a UNESCO World Heritage Site as well, and it's enclosed, as I'm sure those of you who've been there remember, within an Ayyubid fort. But no damage was done to it, remarkably. Very, very small, although you can see that it's quite neglected. You know? And this is the rebels when they took over. That's the stage building up there. So it's got a lot of vegetation busy growing in the tiers everywhere, but it's essentially undamaged. So just to move now slightly to the personal angle, these are just a few pictures of my house and the restoration. This was back in 2005 now. It's incredible to think that was 10 years ago. Another world, really. And so this is the start of the absolute chaos of the restoration period. One of the things I do in the book is to to use the house as a sort of a central character, as a sort of metaphor of what Syria has to go through as well, a kind of complete gutting job. You know, it's complete chaos in this stage where, frankly, it almost looks as if a bomb has dropped on it. It is absolutely chaotic. And this is slightly poignant, actually, because this guy was one of the workmen who was on the house, a Palestinian from Yarmouk. And just today, I see that ISIS have taken over large parts of Yarmouk camp, which is essentially another suburb of Damascus. So I really have no idea where he may be at the moment, but it's interesting that ISIS are coming in from the south into Damascus in a way that's a bit unexpected. People weren't prepared for that, I don't think. And the house, I always see the house as a sort of microcosm of Syrian history and culture, because it's got so many different layers that we unraveled as we started the restoration, taking off, stripping out. It was covered by a sort of uniform white cladding that became a sort of metaphor for the Assad regime, if you like, sort of stifling the true identity of Syria. And the nature of these houses is you can see that mud brick there, that is the sort of mud brick of Mesopotamia, adobe brick it's called, and all the houses are designed and made from that brick, which is a perfect sort of designed for the climate, with it's hot, it protects from the heat in the summer and it keeps the heat in the winter. And these houses have evolved over millennia, from the original courtyard houses in the earliest Mesopotamian homes. And in the house is incredibly beautiful inside as well as outside, and has we found this secret ceiling, as I call it in the book, which nobody even knew was there until we suddenly uncovered it through a tiny hole. And it was just covered in cobwebs, but no damage. I mean, it hadn't seen the light of day for a very, very long time. You see, again, it's got these sort of fantasized buildings around the edges, and then this beautiful colors blended all in. And you can see exactly where the arts and crafts movement got all its inspiration of this, these early sort of orientalized and beautifully blended colors. And then the house also has what they call an ajami room, which is wooden, hand-painted wooden lacquer room, completely around all walls and the ceiling. And then it also has this inscription on the green panels there, which is took us a long time to decipher, but we finally realised it was a kind of Sufi incantation that the original owner would have chosen to kind of represent the atmosphere he wanted in the house. And when you're sitting in that sort of space, it is incredibly overwhelming, really, the sense of culture and history that you can sort of sense the depth of the people who've always inhabited this house. And in the restoration, obviously, you uncover, as I said, that facade was covered in this white cement, and in the taking of that off, you cause some damage, inevitably. But so you see that big hole up there on the left of the door. Everything is as we found it. I took the decision very much not to try to make it perfect, because it isn't perfect. It's old, it should look old, and these are the scars that it bears, you know, from what we had to do to it. And again, I see that as a sort of metaphor of what Syria will bear, the scars, but it will become part of the identity. And then before I hand over to Zahid, this is my last slide I wanted to show you of the house as it ended up then, with the final stages with the fountain working and everything. Beautiful sense of peace and harmony there. It's like some sort of archetypal room that surrounds you. And I can honestly say that I've spent some of the happiest times of my life sitting in that courtyard, just sensing the environment. So, yes.
So, thank you again for being here and listening to us. I will move to the northern and eastern part of Syria. And I'll try to cover the rest of the country. Obviously, the south is more peaceful. The story in the north is completely different. We start in Homs. Homs, as you probably know, the kind of uprising started in 2011, started in Daraa, and then Homs was the quick to react with what's happened in Daraa, and we have massive demonstrations there, which was received by the government really with fierce response. That's resulted to street battles and bombing. The rebels at the time, of course, they took refuge in the small alleyways, the small cities, and the regime used everything possible to flash them and regain control of the town. So here we have examples of nothing spared really in the town. The old bazaar is destroyed. The famous mosque of Khalid bin Walid, although heavily damaged. Here, Knesset Mizanar, the church, the Syriac church, also, as you see, been under attack. Now, the story really goes on and on. Mainly, there are three major phenomena which is happening in Syria at the moment, or in the last 4 years, in terms of damage to heritage and archaeological and artistic cultural sites and artifacts. So, plunder and theft to museum, to archaeological sites, it's been a major problem, and it's systematically done, organized by gangs. We have cases that villagers and the locals try to protect the sites, but they really hopeless because the gangs are moving with arms and forcing everyone to obey what they're doing. And this is all part of a larger network, which is, we could see its artifacts try to be smuggled through to Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey. There was a few cases that some of these pieces, like what we see here on the left and the top from Palmyra, were stopped at the border in Lebanon. So the network is really ugly, and it's going on for some time now. Move north a little bit to Hama. Hama has a bit of itself, has a dark history. As you probably know, in 82, there was some kind of uprising which was crushed. Most of the town, the old city of Hama, was destroyed. And they estimated 20,000 people killed at the time. So when the uprising started in 2011, Hama really stood with Daraa, with Homs, and we had masses of demonstrations on the streets. The government quickly acted and put very high force to stop it and contain it. So Hama itself, it's been spared, it's been safe, but all surrounding areas, which is difficult to control by the Syrian army, it's fell into the Free Syrian Army. So here, let's say Qalat al-Madiq, near Afamia, which is about 20 kilometers of Hama, south of Hama. First, it was with the rebels, so top right, left, and then the government used every kind of force to flush them out, and this is the state of it under the bombing and shelling, and this is continuing till now. It's now under the control of the government. So, this is what happens when under the control of the government, they have peace. But there's a huge damage to this medieval castle, because to move their tanks up, they dug trenches, they carved into walls, and changed the structure of the whole thing. Nearby the site of Afamia, the famous Hellenistic city, which is again now reports to have like a major damage to the colonnade. And there is a little museum in the Khan, which contains a lot of the mosaic recovered from the sites, which is now completely empty, and every part accusing the other side of looting. And the government claimed that they took the pieces to a safe place to protect, but no records of any of these removals. And there was already on the art market some of these mosaics appearing, Interpol reporting that. A little bit towards the north, Idlib, as you know, again, it was saved because it was the city itself under the control of the government, so nothing happened till a few days ago, whereas the Free Syrian Army and other groups took over Idlib. And now in the last few days we see massive exodus, because this is what happens. The soon the rebels take place, the government come with fierce force in all kind of like, you know, bombing, shelling. So now people like, you know, leaving Idlib because they know that's what's going to happen, as it happens in Aleppo. Maret Naman has been heavily damaged. This is the museum, the mosque. You can see the gate to the museum, which is housed one of the finest, some of the finest mosaics from the region. Again, destroyed, looted, and a lot of damage there. Raqqa, more to the Euphrates now, Mesopotamia, Upper Mesopotamia. Different story. Raqqa is now controlled by ISIS, always been. So, again, strange story. The Syrian army withdrew and ISIS took over. So, unlike other places, Raqqa itself never been bombed, but ISIS did the job. So, they demolished whatever they consider not fitting with their ideologies. So here we have shrines of Shias they destroyed. The museum of Raqqa, top left, before the attack, and again not being bombed by the air but by car bombing, and all the artifacts was removed before to a safe house outside in a village nearby Herkel, and was looted by the whole collection of that looted by armed gang. What's going on in Raqqa? It's very strange. So ISIS is under control. They have their own state there. It's the capital of Islamic State. Never been bombed by the government. Only recently, they kind of like, you know, shy. They said, okay, we are fighting ISIS as well. But this story to be unfolded later. Further into Jazeera, Hasaka, Tel Ajaj, south of Hasaka, we have it again, most of the Jazeera under the control of ISIS. Fierce battles have been going on. Here we have the ISIS militia destroying Assyrian sculptors brutally. The reason behind this act was some looters were taking this artifact out, so they destroyed everything. And although they are responsible of smuggling a lot of the artifacts and illicit excavation themselves, ISIS, it's believed that a lot of money, revenue, they are getting from illicit trade in antiquities from the region. Illicit excavations everywhere. So here, Dora Oropos, almost on the Syrian-Iraqi border. Aerial satellites, pictures showing it here on the left, and now dotted with holes of illegal excavations, which is, and again, we know that the mission house and the little museum in that site completely sacked and destroyed and looted. This is the same story in other sites like Mari or Ebla. Sometimes done on a smaller scale, locals just like try to find some way to finance their living, or on a larger scale with armed gangs taking over the sites and looting the place. Aleppo is the capital of the north, as you know. It's one of the oldest inhabited cities in the region, probably in the world. The world city itself, it's a UNESCO World Heritage site since the 80s. But now, in 2012, the rebels took over a big section of Aleppo. So they moved to the center. So the old city itself, I would say about 60% under their control and 30% with the government. The citadel itself, it's the government controlled, under the government control, but most of the city is rebel with a lot of exchange of grounds all the time between the two sides. The city is constantly bombed, barrel bombs, and targeted by air, and really the damage is beyond repair. We'll see, like, you know, some evidence of that. The castle itself, it's under the government control, so we have snipers everywhere, which cause the rebels to exchange fire and shelling. So we have, like, you know, some reported damage to some of the towers and fortifications, and also to the main gate. But largely intact, but the story is different surrounding the castle. So the photo up there of the view from the castle, this is the front of the castle, the Sultaniya Mosque, is a Mamluki mosque, and here you can see only the tower left, the minaret, and the rest of it is completely gone. Now the other mosque there, anyway, on the top right, the Khosrowiya Mosque. It was the Ottomans, built by Mamar Sinan, the famous architect, now completely disappeared. Nothing left. So on the left, down there, you see only a few arches there of that place. The same story with the left building, which is used to house the government's, the mayor house building. That's completely disappeared. The Yalbogha Nasri Hammam, also gone. And then there's the hospital, the Ottoman hospitals, which became the Carlton Hotel, also gone. There's, like, you know, systematic digging under the town of Aleppo to gain ground and move under the forces of the government and blow up buildings. This is causing huge damage to the old city. Recent reports, this is in the castle. This is again recent excavations in the castle. They started in the middle of 90s by a German professor. Kai Kollmeyer, he excavates the old city of capital of Yamhad, the kingdom of Yamhad, underneath the castle, revealing massive reliefs and artworks from the period. So that's brought light to the history of Aleppo, goes back to 3000 BC, which was unknown. Anyway, Meyer himself, Kollmeyer, before leaving the place, he covered it all, and the plan was to erect a museum to show this monumental discovery. This is very recent photographs showing that it's been destroyed and some of the reliefs being displaced or removed. So it's not very clear, but something is happening as well. And this is completely under the control of the Syrian army. Of course, the town, this is what it looks like. The old town of Aleppo is just ruins. It's officially now the most destroyed city since the Second World War, and continue to be so. We have, like, day in and day out shelling. And remember that the shelling comes from the air and from tanks, that only the governments have this kind of, like, you know, arms. The rebels, they're causing a lot of damage. I mean, in my opinion, they should not be in the old city at all, because that's what happens. The governments come, the army, and bomb everything. Umayyad Mosque, another tragic. Here, the minarets. This is one of the oldest and most beautiful mosques in Syria, which is completely destroyed. The minarets fall down in April last year. We know that the library burnt and destroyed. Now, in the middle of all this mayhem, there's like a group of locals, young archaeologists or architect students. They are taking actions into their hands, and they try to protect places, like here in the minbar, not the minbar, the shrine of Zakaria in the mosque, being covered by bricks. And so there's some efforts, but very modest, really, in comparison to the damage happening. The bazaar, which is one of the longest covered bazaar in the world, this is the state of it. It used to be, like, you know, the house of, like, the old city housed about 110,000 inhabitants. And it is really the stock market. It is the life, the economical heart of Syria. I mean, Aleppo used to be, contribute 75% of the Syrian economy. And most of this work happens within this market. So it's not only the heritage, it's life, it's business, economy, all gone in rebels. On personal level, which is like really another example here, my house, I have a similar story to Diana. In 2004, I bought this little Mamluki house, dates to 1560. You see, it has the same kind of composition. One facade is Mamluki, and then you see the one on the left, it's done in later time. I mean, Aleppo was hit by a major earthquake, which is described one of the worst 10 earthquakes that hit the world. And in 2 days, 230,000 people killed, and most of Aleppo was destroyed. And according about this time, probably you could see here some changes in the architecture of the house. Anyway, it took me 4 years to restore the place and bring it to its former glory. This side was an Ottoman addition to it in about like 1910. So it's all restored. In 2010, looked like that. From outside, you don't see anything. From inside, it's kind of like a little paradise. Now, in 2013, this is the last, my father used to go and take care of the place all the time. This is at the heart of, like, you know, action and fights. In 2013, in May, that's the last time we could go there. There was an explosion, one of those pressure bombs that destroyed the top floor, and apparently all the wooden doors, windows were shattered, including this heavy front door, which is like, it's a traditional Aleppo style heavy door of wood and covered with metal. That's all blown from the explosion. All the electric sockets all blown out of its place from the pressure. Since then, I don't have any news about the place. I've been searching internet for images. So this is the actual street now. That's the beginning of the street, and this is the end of the street. And you can see, and I don't know, my house is in the middle. So I have completely no information on its fate. And this is the square just nearby, so you can see the fire damage and the bullets all over the place. Just been in contact with the carpenter who did the work in the house 10 years ago, and he said there's no way anyone can go into this zone. It's heavy fights between Jabhat Nusra and the Syrian army. So this is our examples of magnificent houses around my, in the quarter of Jadeidah. If any of you have been in Aleppo, that's used to be the hotel Zamaria, the top two pictures, which is completely destroyed. Our examples, so shelling, bombing, that's the daily action there, which caused 70% of the city now to be destroyed. Move to a bit of ironic story here. The Museum of Aleppo, as you see, this section of Aleppo is under the government control. So all the cases being emptied, and there's a sandbag to protect the facade, which is from the Tel Halaf temple. Now, the irony here, the gentleman there, the Baron Max von Oppenheim, he excavated Tel Halaf, and he removed the artifacts and the temple gate statues, which is, they are giants, as you see here, first to the museum, and he made copies of the finds, and they put them in Aleppo, and he took the original to Berlin. So what they are kind of protecting here are plaster casts of the originals. Now, those people would say, oh, this is lucky for them, being probably spared this turmoil in Syria now. But in 43, the Allies bombed Berlin, and the top right, this is the fate of Tel Halaf artifacts. It became 25,000 pieces, shards. It took the Germans 50, 60 years to put together with masses of money, efforts to put all these shards together. So on average, each of these pieces, they managed to put together about 4,000 pieces, averaging 900 to 2,000 shards each piece. So massive work done here to look like that. I'm afraid, to finish with this note, but unfortunately the Syria heritage history will look like this, and it's carrying on to be so. It's fragmented, it's destroyed, and only with the masses of efforts and expertise we can put it together to look like that, if not just rubbish. Thank you for listening. Maybe to finish with it.
Yeah, I just want to say, obviously, there's a massive amount of bad news generally. You know, as Zahid was explaining, you know, everything has kind of gone backwards in Syria. I mean, even the IMF has said that you know, the economy has regressed by 40 years, and in terms of human development, it's gone backwards by a similar amount. I mean, the sheer scale of what's gone on is we haven't witnessed anything like this since World War II. The scale of it is truly shocking. On the other hand, I don't want to leave you utterly depressed, so I want to also mention that there is some good news. For a start, the Syrian Director General of Antiquities and Museums, they've actually appointed a new guy in 2012, who is generally regarded to be a very good thing. And he is saying that 99% of what is held in Syria's museums across the country, so that's about 34 museums, hundreds of thousands of artifacts, has mainly already been packed up for safekeeping and removed and put in safe places. And when I was in Damascus in December, the reason the National Museum was closed was because behind the closed doors they're actually busy packaging it all up now. 80,000 artifacts in Damascus University Museum alone. And in Deir ez-Zor, they took a decision. Deir ez-Zor is split, you know, between it's largely ISIS controlled, but the regime is still in control of the airport there and some areas. And so they took the decision to try and evacuate everything from Deir ez-Zor Museum, which is another major museum in Syria. 13,000 artifacts, and three of them took a whole week to package it all up, and then managed to get a military truck that came under fire to an aircraft that actually, you know, was piled into a military aircraft along with wounded and dead bodies and pretty graphic stuff, but they managed to recoup it. And so, you know, the 2,500 employees of the Director General of Antiquities and Museums are actually doing their best across the whole of Syria. This isn't just in government-controlled areas. Across the whole country, they are actually doing their best. And in my experience, actually, a lot of Syrians within the ministries are genuinely doing their best in really, really difficult situations. So that's one positive thing. The other thing I was astonished to read about is that there is a massive scheme taking place in Beirut where they've consulted 1,000 Syrian experts, and 200 of them are working full-time. They're a mixture of architects, conservationists, engineers, water specialists, conservationists, you know, complete group of people who are preparing for day one when finally the fighting is over. They want to have a plan in place, and again, this is bringing people together from all sides. So there are people there who are from the government, there are people from the opposition, and there are international experts, and they're all actually working on a plan. It's called the National Agenda Future of Syria. And this is going on now. There are people now planning for the day when it will finally finish, which will, you know, who knows how long that's going to take, but it's probably going to take longer than we think. This is probably any safe way of putting it. But I find that personally very, very reassuring that people are working on all of this now. And then the final positive note I wanted to just mention is that, as Zahid mentioned, this group, they're called APSA. They have actually...
Most of the documentation was done by... This is young archaeologists.
Yes, they, and most of the photographs that we've been showing you are actually from APSA, which is a group, you know, of just... sort of archaeologists, just interested Syrians.
They are ex-employees, they used to work for the archaeologists, they work
archaeologists,
for the,
exactly.
The department.
And they are both inside and outside Syria. And they are particularly trying to protect monuments in opposition-held areas where all the UNESCO forces and people, you know, just can't reach these areas. And so they are doing their best, but they're all volunteers. Nobody pays them anything. They're just doing this in order to save their own heritage. And I just wanted to mention that if any of you are interested in helping anything towards that at all, Zahid and I can actually channel some funds directly to them, and then that enables them to hold workshops where they can train people to actually show them how to protect the buildings, because that's pretty much all they can do in the moment, and they desperately want to do it. They all desperately want to do it. So if any of you would be interested in that, just come and see us afterwards, and we can channel some funds directly to them, and then that goes directly to the people on the ground. So everybody is doing what they can, and I think probably it will only end when people realise that there's actually more money to be made out of the reconstruction than there is out of the fighting. At the moment, there's been this massive investment in fighting and in the destruction, and there must come a point where people realise there's more money to be made out of the reconstruction. So I think it would probably be an economic conclusion to the whole thing, but who knows? Until people are ready to reach that point, we just don't know how long that's going to take. But we're trying to do what we can in the meantime. So